Heyo, and here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music. This is live and in your ear. I am your host, Mr. Bread Podcast, and I am joined by a special guest today. He is the guitarist for the Dead Daisies and Revolution Saints, and the reason that we're here, Burning Rain. Mr. Doug Aldrich is joining us. How are you, Doug?
I'm good, Brett. Thanks for having me, bro. Thank you so much.
Oh, you know, totally happy to have you on the show. Look forward to talking, because, I mean, you've done so much in your career. It's amazing. I mean, besides the fact that those bands that I've listed, I mean, you've also played with Whitesnake and Ronnie James Dio. And, I mean, talking about Ronnie James Dio is a favorite of ours on We Talk Music. So, you know, I look forward to asking you about him a little bit. But the reason we're here is to talk about the new Burning Rain album, that's Face the Music. And that's coming out March 22nd.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. We had, you know, it's always fun to make new music, and I'm really proud of the record, and it's something that Keith and I, you know, it's our 20th anniversary, actually, believe it or not. We've got this is our fourth record, and it's always been a baby band in our back pockets. We've always been busy. As you said, I was, you know, working with Dio and Whitesnake after I was already working with Keith and Burning Rain, but we just, you know, and he was at that time doing Ronnie Montrose. We've just always, you know, it's always been a little kind of a pet project for us, or a pet band. But this time I was happy to find out that Dead Daisies was going to take a little break, just good for the band to take a little break, and that would allow me time to really properly promote Face the Music. And so we're off and running. We've got some acoustic shows coming up and a Frontiers Festival, and then we're looking on during the Dead Daisies breaks, we're going to be doing other dates. So we're really excited.
Yeah, I mean, that's really cool. I saw that you were doing those acoustic shows, and I thought, damn, that'd be great to go to. I'll bet those are a lot of fun.
It's going to be cool, man. I mean, I'll tell you the truth. I always loved acoustic guitar and writing in acoustic. And the guy that I got to give credit to, I mean, is Coverdale, because he and I would sit down with a couple acoustic guitars and just jam around ideas, and that would lead to other things. And he told me that when he was working with Tony Franklin for a minute, and he worked obviously with Page, but he said that Tony Franklin knew all of Jimmy Page's tunings. And I said, well, I know a few of those tunings too. And I kind of went back and revisited them. And this was years ago, but I started to come up with all these song ideas with different tunings. And then to be able to take a rock song, or to make a rock song out of an acoustic song, and then bring it back to being an acoustic song, is really fun for me. I don't know why. I love it. So Keith and I doing Burning Rain songs acoustically is so cool. It's just awesome. I love it. And then we did it with Dead Daisies. Dead Daisies would do, we had this thing last year called Daisyland, which we would kind of do half acoustic electric, and then we'd sometimes do just straight acoustic. And we would take a song like Song and a Prayer and make it into a different kind of vibe. So we'd kind of rewrite the vibe of the song, and it was a lot of fun. And we did the same thing with Dead and Gone, where we did a swamp version that's they're using it on this YouTube series called Welcome to Daisyland. So I've loved it, man, and it's going to be great with Keith. We already sat down and it was like, I showed him, like, here's how I would do, here's how I would play the guitar on Smooth Locomotion acoustically. And he's like, well, that's cool. And he'd start singing it, and it's like, then he kind of changes his part a little bit. It's really fun.
That sounds really awesome. You don't think about it, I think, from a fan perspective. Like, I think for myself, you just think about the idea of sitting down, like, okay, you just transpose the electric guitar parts onto acoustic guitar, and you're done.
No, because it doesn't lend itself the same way to play. You know, like a song like on the new record, Nasty Hustle, we're gonna be doing that song as an acoustic song, and you it wouldn't it's you wouldn't play it that way on acoustic. You need to find a bit more of a strummy way, or maybe you do an arpeggio, and you can really break it down and change the whole vibe of the song. It's pretty cool.
Now, it's nice that you brought up Nasty Hustle. I think that might be my favorite song on the album.
Oh, right on. Cool.
I just really enjoyed the groove on that. And I think it's what I like about the album as a whole, is the fact that it's got this great groove and it's got this great feeling where to me it seems like you don't care about what's going on outside. You're just making a really good rock album.
Yeah, well, that's part of the way the industry has changed, is that you don't really have to, you don't have to please anybody but yourself, really, and that's what I always try and do, whether it's in a situation like Dead Daisies where, we do everything together, or a situation like Burning Rain where, eventually I would love to do everything together with Burning Rain, because I really think that's the way to do it. But Keith and I sat down prior to having Bloss and Brad in the band and just started to carve out some songs that we liked. And you don't have to worry about having a hit single anymore. It helps to get on the radio and stuff, of course, but there's also social media that can take something in. And songs like Nasty Hustle, let's be honest, it's kind of a edgy lyric.
And yes.
it's like a serious, F off song about a, I think, I'm just guessing, because you'd have to talk to Keith, but telling your girlfriend, or a girl that wants to be with you, you're saying no, or a guy that wants to be with you, you're saying no, just F off, it's not going to happen. And what the reason for that is, I guess, I don't know, maybe somebody pissed somebody off, but it's definitely edgy, so songs like that might get banned or something in some places, you never know.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. So I guess then, what is your process for making Burning Rain albums?
It's either starts off with Keith and I, or it starts off with I'll have an idea and I'll show various ideas to Keith, and he's really good about, like, it doesn't matter what I do, he will try and sing on it.
Wow.
He'll try and find something that works and. Or something that's, can go along with it. And so we would record those things on cell phone, and then I would kind of develop my end of it and then send him a rough of that. And then he'd kind of develop his end, and we'd get back together and make some changes. And he might suggest something to me, or I would definitely tell him, say, hey, I'm getting a hit on this melody here that I really think could work really strong. And we just go from there. And then once the songs are kind of roughly demoed, we get in the studio and cut them proper. But as I said, I would love to take these guys and get in a room and just kind of bang through everybody's ideas and see what we get, and try and see what, if we can get a very organic, type of writing situation going.
Yeah, so I assume then that Keith does the vast majority of the lyrics?
Yeah, for the most part, it's on this record, it's almost 100%. On the last record, there was a couple songs that I kind of helped move along because I really loved them, and I got a hit for some lyrics and went with it. But to be honest, Keith just killed it on this record, so I was really happy. I just told him, like, let's go a little deeper with some subjects. Let's get a little political on some stuff, and you don't have to get into detail about it, anything in detail, but let's get where we're talking about, like, Revolution is one of my favorite songs, and it's kind of, relates to government, like, in a sense. And then other songs like Nasty Hustle or a song like Lorelei, which is another one of Keith's and my favorite songs on the record. It's got a very deep, kind of meaning, mythological meaning of that siren on the side of the water that would make sailors want to come, crash their ship so they could get to her. And it's like a really interesting story there. So these are things I thought Keith nailed so well. I was like, the only thing I would do is try and help him with maybe simplifying sometimes some stuff, because I would notice, I learned from Coverdale, you know, something simple and people can catch it, they're going to really remember it.
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it, for sure, because there's no doubt that, I mean, the more that, I think, and again, as a fan, like, the more that something is going to stick with me, and probably simpler means better, you know, to get it to stick with me, then, you know, I'm going to be more likely, because that's one of the things now with music, is that we have so many choices of music that we can listen to at any given time, that it's not just your CD collection or your cassette collection, as it was when I started, but, you know, it's that whole, like, I could stream music, I can listen to CDs, I can do whatever. And so, yeah, for me to make that decision that I'm going to listen to the new Burning Rain disc is that kind of concept, where it's just like, when those things stand out, and absolutely, for me, they do, then I'm more likely to pick you out of a lineup in that case.
Yeah, hopefully. You and as many people as we can get would be awesome. we're really excited about it. And I think that you brought up a thing that's important to mention about this Burning Rain record. It is a bit simpler overall musically, too. There's some of the earlier stuff, I was, you know, just really going for it musically, with, like, guitar parts, crazy stuff. And this one's a bit simpler, you know? The rhythm guitar is a bit more direct and simple, and you know, there's some lead guitar stuff. Hopefully it'll fulfill the guitar player's expectations, but overall, lyrically and everything, it's trying to be simple and direct and kind of go in some new directions lyrically.
Well, I found for myself that I really, it felt kind of like, what if I crossed Aerosmith with Whitesnake, and that's kind of where I felt this album was, and so for me, that made me really happy.
That's cool, man. I you know, there's definitely some nods of the hat to Aerosmith, and I want to be clear, because it's very obvious when you hear it, like, wow, that's kind of got an Aerosmith vibe. And I'm fine with it, as long as it comes naturally and organically. Like, you know, I might hit a couple of chords that maybe remind somebody of Aerosmith, or in my case, a lot of times it's Zeppelin. And then Keith will come up with something, and on top of what I've done, and it might sound like, okay, man, that sounds like, you know, whatever. It might sound like a Van Halen thing. It might sound like a Deep Purple thing. And so it's just, as long as it happens naturally and it's not planned, I'm cool with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so that's basically how it was for us. It was very natural and organic, you know. And then if something has a tip of a hat, you know, there's some stuff that's kind of Zeppelin-oriented in some ways. Some stuff is, we've got some Deep Purple type stuff, some straight up blues stuff. There's a song where somebody told me If It's Love reminded them of the ZZ Top song.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
I didn't get that, but then when I thought about it, he mentioned the song Jesus Just Left Chicago, but I thought of Rough Boy. I thought that if it sounded like anything, it could sound like Rough Boy. So it's interesting. Everyone's got their own take, but we definitely, I will tell you, I love Aerosmith. I love Zeppelin. I love Deep Purple. I love Whitesnake, obviously. And, you know, my blues guitar playing is kind of, those rhythms that I've always loved were from the early Whitesnake type. You know, Ready and Willing is a classic example of how Burning Rain came up with songs like, Smooth Locomotion on our first record, and even stuff like Revolution on this record is something that, you know, could be Whitesnake-y, or Beautiful Road is another song that could be Whitesnake-y, but also has a tip of a hat to Zeppelin. So it's all, you know, it's all there. It's good for everyone to have an opinion and see what they think about that, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's really impossible to lose your you know, those things that make you who you are and those things that you enjoy. But it's how you put it out there that you make it your own. I mean, that's really what's most important, I would think.
That's right. And the sound, we definitely, together with Keith and the guys, we have a sound that is, it's not Dead Daisies, it's not Whitesnake, it's Burning Rain. So that's what you hope for, anyway.
Yeah. So I'm interested, when it comes to Keith, I mean, you've worked with him a long time, obviously. So what is your relationship like?
It's like, brothers that are passionate about what we're doing. We have sparks that fly in good ways, and we have, there's times like anybody that you're creative with, sometimes you get rubs, and that's sometimes where you get like some really amazing things. It's not a love relationship where we're always agreeing on everything. We definitely don't agree on everything. So that brings out the best, and it's pretty normal that if somebody's got a good idea and somebody's not getting it, that you're gonna, if you believe you got a good idea, you're gonna fight for it. So our relationship's good as far as, we love each other. I know that. But we definitely bring out, some fire in the other guy too. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally. I mean, I've always been a firm believer in the fact that you need to be able to work off of somebody else, but you have to be able to argue with them in that respect, because it's true. It does make everything better.
It just brings a different thing to it. I mean, we're still a baby band. We've been together 20 years, but we're still it's our small thing that we really want to make it happen. And so we're fighting on the way to how are we going to do that? I mean, some of the bands that I've loved the most in my life had relationships that were edgy and sometimes, and Zeppelin and Aerosmith are two points of that. And then later the band, the Black Crowes, the brothers, yeah. The brothers are they're so amazing together, but they just, an Oasis, they're so amazing together, but they just have a really hard time being around each other. But, I would say that you're right. You need it's a yin yang thing. You kind of need that.
Yeah. So what goes into the perfect guitar solo then for you? Or at least, I guess, the perfect for the song more so.
Well, I don't know. I never know what's the perfect thing. There's solos that I'll do on one take that's kind of just off the cuff. And then there's other solos that I have to work really hard on. Like, where is it going to go, and how can I... how can I make it really work with the melody of the song? There's a song, Hideaway, on the record that's probably not one of the feature songs, but it's one of my favorites. And that song, I started off I did a one-take blues-type solo on it, and it was really cool. And then I decided, I could hear some melodies on this thing. And I kind of went back and kind of hit it from a different perspective, hitting it with some melody. And same thing with If It's Love. There's a little bit more melody involved in that one. Then other stuff is just kind of sheer, like Nasty Hustle is kind of goes along with the song because it's just intense,
Mm-hmm.
And a song like Lorelei deserves a little bit deeper thing. So I kind of, a lot of times, it's the chords that go underneath it that determine the solo. How the solo sounds. Sometimes, you can take a fresh group of chords and it lifts the song into the guitar solo, and then you can change a certain chord here or there and kind of give it a classical vibe. Like the end of Lorelei kind of has that classical thing to it that guys like Randy Rhoads and Michael Schenker used to do. So I don't know the perfect solo. I know that sometimes, for me, the best solos are the first ones, or the best ideas that I get are the first ones, and then I either have to develop them from there or I leave them, because it's just a moment that I caught that I can't really replay.
Yeah, I suppose that, because, I mean, and how many times has that been brought up where it's just like, yeah, it's your first instinct and usually it's the right one, yeah.
Yeah, well, a lot of times, even though I want to keep working on it, a producer, for example, would say, Doug, what are you doing? It's that first one you did, that's the shit. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And they're saying, listen to it. I'm like, I could play that so much better. And the guy would go, okay, show me, do it. Do the same solo and do it better. And probably eight out of 10 times I can't do it better. The first one was really cool. It had a vibe. And then there is those times when I know what I did and I know where I wasn't as clean as I could be or whatever, and it'll take me one or two takes and I can beat it. but the instinct of the first solo is usually a good one.
Oh, that's cool. So I do want to ask, because I'm always fascinated. So what kind of things did you learn, for your career from Ronnie Dio?
Well, first thing is just really, owning it and being in the moment, not worrying about, I mean, when Ronnie was on stage singing, man, he's not thinking about anything else than that. And you could see it, you could hear it. He would deliver his stuff with such gusto and angst that it was like, man, he is just like on fire. And he always was. He's kind of like, in the sense that Stevie Ray Vaughan was on guitar, just totally on all the time when he's playing. That's how Ronnie was. I don't think Ronnie, I played over 100 shows with him in 2002. And, he never had a bad night. And then in 2005, we did a couple of runs in Europe, and he was even sick one night when we were recording a DVD, and he killed it then. He digs deep. So I learned that. You got to dig deep. You got to own it. And he definitely did. I learned that... another thing I learned from him was basically how to hold your own on the stage. He made me do it. He made me do a 9-minute guitar solo or whatever it was. It wasn't that I wanted to. He said, "Look, my guitar players all did this, and I want you to take that stage and make it your own." And I want he pushed me. He would push me too. He wanted everybody to be their best and to be the most brilliant they could be.
That's really cool. Just that idea of owning the stage, I think that's really awesome.
He would, if you see those videos of him prancing around stage back and forth, man, it's just so unbelievable. And that's, it makes me think of the, people often ask me about the Dio, what do you call it?
The hologram?
Hologram, sorry. And I say, I support it. That's what Wendy wants to do. And that I support the band. I'd actually love to see it myself. But I would say there's no way that it could compare to the real dude. The real dude was, was four-dimensional.
That's... Yeah, we saw Ronnie a couple of times live, and I mean, he's absolutely amazing. I mean, what a performer. That's one of the reasons. I mean, he's just one of those guys that, and that's why I like talking about him, because he's meant so much to so many people along the way, and he's meant the same things, but yet something different to everybody. So I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah, He definitely left, he'd gone too soon. I can basically right now, I could still picture what he'd be doing right now. If he wasn't on tour, he'd be in his house creating music. He'd go over there to write a song, and he'd be in his kitchen, and he'd be listening to the sports radio, and then he would, he'd say, after a little bit, he'd talk and, get something to drink or whatever, and then, okay, let's go down to the studio, and we'd be in the studio all day long until, 7 or 8 at night. Then we'd knock it on the head, come back the next day and do it again. And he loved it, man. He'd sit there for hours working on. There was a time that he was working on this drum part with Simon, and these guys spent like 2 days on this one drum fill. It was just like, I had to check out. I was like, guys, I can't hear that freaking drum fill one more time. It's killing me. I hear it in bed in my sleep on that drum fill. But that's how passionate Ronnie was about it. He wanted it to be right, and it was like, it would take him as long as it took him to figure out what he wanted to do. And then other things, it was super quick. You know, and most things, he was super quick. When Ronnie would record, it was easily, he could do it in one take. He wouldn't even show up to the studio unless he was prepared to do it in one take. And then he usually would do the majority of it in the first couple go-rounds, and maybe go up and clean it up, you know, in some spots where he might want to change the lyric, or maybe the timing didn't feel right, or whatever.
Wow, that's really neat. So now we're running out of time,
No, I was just gonna say that sucks, man, because this is awesome. Yeah. I really, you know, I enjoy talking about Ronnie and David and all that stuff, but.
Well, I mean, hey, I've got time if you've got time.
I've got another 5 minutes or so. I've got one more interview coming up, but I you know, mainly wanted to just say to you, you know, hope you enjoy the record, Face the Music, and you know, I'm really excited about it getting out there and people just having it for a while. It's not a record that's probably immediate, like that people are going to go, ah, it's brilliant immediately, but I think it's a record that will grow on people, that you can spin it for a while, and it's not going to, you know, get on your nerves. It's going to get stronger.
Oh yeah, I totally agree with that. One thing that we got to do, you got to tell all the fans where they can find the record on March 22nd.
I would say the easiest thing, you can obviously go to Frontiers Music, Frontiers Records online and order it there, but Amazon is probably the easiest one. And then you should check our socials, you know, Burning Rain Official. Just search Burning Rain Official for you know, Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, and there'll be links to get the record as well. There's a pre-order link on Frontiers Music right now, Frontiers Records. If you Google that, you'll find the link to the pre-order. I think we signed about 500 CDs and 100 albums. So I know those are for pre-order, the very, very pre-order, and then they'll go from there.
That's really cool. Well, you know, Doug Aldrich, I thank you so much for your time. You're an amazing guest, and I hope that Face the Music is everything you want it to be, because I think it's a really good album, and I urge everyone else to pick it up and give it a listen, because it's worth it.
Thanks so much, Brad. I really appreciate it, man. And all the best to you and your listeners, and hope to see you. Are you in Canada?
In Canada, Calgary. Yeah, hopefully you get a chance to come up here.
We'd love to. I love it in Canada. In fact, I'm just filling out my paperwork to make the border crossing faster for me. Because I do have a clean record.
There you go.
I'm happy to say. It's so funny. You know, there was... Canada is very difficult to get into. You know,
you gotta
be right.
Yeah, so many stories, boy. Whew.
Yeah, there was one time we were crossing the border with Dio, and there was a guest of the band that had something that popped up on his background, and I'll never forget. This guy was like, he was Ronnie, I'm so sorry. And Ronnie's like, I don't care. We'll see when we get back. You know, and. I never forget this guy. He was a super nice guy. He owned a restaurant, but it was something, maybe, I don't know what it was. Could have been anything, drunk driving or something. And he was like, nope, you're not coming in. And I remember him walking back across the border, back to New York, and finding his way back. But fortunately, knock on wood, most of the people I have worked with have all, you know, had clean records, and never had to do anything except just you got to go to the border and you got to be presentable and get off. It doesn't matter what time. Usually you got to get off the bus. I'll tell you a quick story, really quick, about when I came into Canada with Whitesnake. We were on tour with the Scorpions in 2003, and we were going into, this was probably Toronto, I think, we were going into. And David's bus went first, and I remember the girl, it was a girl, a Customs Border Patrol, and she came on our bus and basically was like, okay, I just met my... I met the love of my life. So give me your passports. I'm stamping them. Bam, 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 bam. Because David was charmed. He probably was like, yes, Sully, how would you, would you like to have some tea? You know, and it was a cold night. It was the winter. It was like February or something. And so we go, we're driving in, we're going towards Toronto, and we kind of were all in our bunks asleep. And then we pull over, and I woke up, and I was like, oh, are we here? And the guy goes, no, we're on the side of the road. I'm like, what's going on? And he goes, well, the border, the Customs Border Patrol person left her stamp on our bus, and they want it back. And by the way, the Scorpions are at the border right now, and they don't have enough stamps to get all their crew and their people in. It's taking forever. So the Canadian Mounted Police were rushing to our bus location so they could get the stamp back. Because the girl was so charmed that she forgot. She was like, here, I'll stamp everybody's passport. Let me stamp it. And then she must have left it on the bus, and that's what happened. We pulled over and waited for the police to show up and get the stamp back, take it back to the border. Now they probably got, you know, electronic stamps or whatever. But
yeah. Oh, that's very funny. I love that story. Great stuff. Well, I look
thanks
forward
for
to
it. I really appreciate everything, man. And like you said, I hope people will check out the record.
Oh, yeah. Well, I look forward to having you on again sometime. You know, because we didn't even get a chance to talk about your time in Lion and working on the Transformers theme. Like that, I mean, there you go.
Wow, you know about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was going to lead with that.
Well, that was an interesting thing, man. We were working with the record company. We didn't have a great experience with that particular record company because they turned out they didn't have too many tour support or anything.
Mm.
But so we couldn't really get out. We got offered a tour with Blue Oyster Cult at the time that would have been really cool, and they wouldn't give us any money to do it. So we were stuck. But one of the things that they did do that was cool is they got us on some soundtracks, and that particular song was just a theme song. It was like not even a theme song. It was a 30-second clip.
Yeah.
And Cal and I turned it into a rock song with parts and solo and guitar solo and everything. And it's really interesting. People will still come up and go, man, I love that version that you guys did. You know, we're talking 30-something years
ago. Yeah, for sure. Now, I mean, that's wicked. Yeah, I mean, totally. I'd love to keep talking to you, but I know you got to get going for your other interview. So, yeah, Doug Eldridge, I look forward to speaking to you again because I think I got a million questions.
Well, let's do it again. Anytime you want, just set it up and I'll be there.
All right.
Thank you, brother.
let's get on before the darkness fades. Cause I crave you, and I'm so thirsty. Honey's dripping in the summer rain. Shake the night, cause it's all gone black. Midnight train going down that track. Bloodshot eyes in the light of day.